she was taken to a concentration camp. Imprisoned and lost her life there. So this is her brother who composed this in memory of her life. It's from a, and someone could please take notes about my references. Thank you. It's from a CD titled The Symphonic Works. And when you listen deeply into it, you'll see that Eastern and Western modalities of music are brought together, as was the family. Father being Hazrat Inayat Khan, mother being Aura Ray Baker. She was an American, and you can feel that in the music. Thank you. can imagine here that when she was in being pursued by the Germans, she escaped, and then they caught her again. She was running on the rooftop, so you can feel that in this music. I ask Piro Murshid Hidayat if we could have the privilege of our little center, which is kind of really a virtual center. It's not really a place. It's all of us could have that name. And he gave us the name, the Midwest International Sufi Movement Nur Anisa Center. I also want you to know, Melody, that you have the inspiration to work on a project. And he's given you all rights and privilege to use whatever music you would like to. He's very happy about that. In photos or whatever that can be provided. To take your coat. Welcome. perfection of love, harmony, and beauty, the only being, united with all the illuminated souls who form the embodiment of the Master, the Spirit of Guidance. So let us take a moment before we begin. We still might have one or two joining us. I know Joe and I received a number of phone calls this morning, so our group is decidedly smaller than it has been in the past. I think there's a reason for that. I think the subject matter today is not meant for everyone, so it's probably whoever is here is intended to receive this teaching. There's something about the timing of the universe, I'm sure. But let us, along with this invocation, take a moment to, in our mind's eye, in our heart, in our being, invoke the presence of those that have inspired us, that have brought us to this place, this moment. They may be among the great prophets, the archangels. It may be someone that's been very kind to us, that showed us the way of being a real human being through the way of kindness and love. Maybe a grandmother, or grandfather, aunt or uncle, kind neighbor. But invite the presence of those beings here. I mean, we have amongst us many sort of unsung heroes. And we also have great beings that have left vast teachings for us. So we invoke their presence. And also our teachers, Hazrat and Icon. And all those that have flowed from that lineage. We ask that they come and be with us here now to further open our hearts and minds so that we can fully receive these teachings, and that they may be vital and useful in our lives and in our gift of our life to others. Trust and have full confidence that all those luminous, illuminated, enlightened beings are here with us now and guiding us. A way of kind of bringing the circle closer together, I'd like to pass these two small books around. Whichever one speaks to you, just take a moment and just open it up. These are little aphorisms. And just read it aloud to the group.
The knowledge of life related to tangible realities is called science. When related to intangible realities, it is called esoteric awakening. And when the knowledge of life is related to the thinking power, it's called psychology.
These are by Hidayatullah Khan also.
The tone of the voice is not only suggestive of one's conscience, thoughts, and feelings, but also reveals the extent of one's inner evolution.
Thoughts and feelings can have a certain influence on animals and plants, and even upon those objects which we treasure. These thoughts and feelings also rebound within our hearts, thereby awakening the subtle vibrations of the silent stories of the subject of concentration.
Well, Leo, there we go. There's a special sound that had an influence on the animal. Thank you, Leo. You always have a good teaching for us. He's so funny, isn't he? He's such a funny guy. Yeah, Leo, that's enough, though.
That's enough love, Leo.
Come on, babe.
Nice and warm.
Come on, Leo. That's it.
Go back to mommy.
Come on, Leo.
Yeah.
Okay. Lay down.
Good boy.
The art of personality is like music. It requires training, but to a person who is open to the music of life, that art comes naturally.
Every person carries a particular atmosphere, the kind as well as the wicked, the spiritual person as well as the materialist. No one can ever falsify their own atmosphere. This space, which is a capacity, holds within itself the rhythm of the vibrations of all that fills it. Everything that is visible, audible, tangible, or perceptible in any way is structured in various proportions of the specific characteristics of the vibrations of the five elements and is subject to the laws of cause and effect. It has often been noticed that one is more successful when avoiding an unnecessary display of one's plans. Otherwise, in so doing, the energy working behind one's ideal loses its strength.
A quiet way of working usually has a successful outcome. By making too much noise about things, one creates commotion and a disturbance in the atmosphere, which has unsuccessful results.
During life's journey, the further behind one has left the self, the further one has progressed toward a higher level of consciousness. For when the limited self is lost, the unlimited real self is then discovered.
Clay and potter are involved in the making of the pot, but only the potter enjoys the process of the making. We as clay cannot realize the joy of the Creator in molding our existence for the purpose of creation. That which a mystic does not see in form is in any case seen in space at another level of consciousness. Therefore, when a person says that something does not exist, the mystic replies that it does exist somewhere, if not on the physical plane, then certainly in the sphere of mind.
Is comparable to a moving picture composed of numberless particles which together create a coordinated image. This is what occurs when repeating a wazifa or mantra a great number of times, resulting in the formation of a psychological condition related to the characteristics of the repeated word.
Whatever one concentrates upon becomes sooner or later a source of willpower by which one can become intoxicated, unless one is prepared to liberate oneself from the acquisition of that power, rising beyond self-indulgence in search of an awakening to divine will.
At times, hearing another speak can be the cause of continual tension, robbing one of time and energy, which is again a loss of magnetism.
Yeah. I've been right careful mark. How I say things today.
Right on the mark. Not about you, but
about
life.
All of us, of course. Through wishing another well, one's good thoughts offer to oneself in return those same positive feelings, even before they have been expressed. The same reaction also occurs when sending negative thoughts to others, which have a similar effect upon oneself. We were last night at a little Dharma talk. Gachamba Moshe is in town, and he gave a talk on exactly this subject. He could have said this. An hour and a half he talked on karma, cause and effect. This is exactly what he was talking about in a way. But we know Jesus also said it, didn't he? You know how he said that, Diane? You're so good in your Christian scriptures.
I wish.
Well, that
that we sow, so shall we reap.
Sure.
Yes. We hear that many times. Hazrat Anayat Khan says that the whole world is like an echo. Whatever we put out into that sphere returns back to us.
Oh, yeah. Multiply. Mm-hmm. Boomerang.
And the designer this week, what was this? Was saying everything I do comes back to me.
Oh, everything I do comes back to me. Yeah. Interesting. We're hearing that again and again. We went to see a rather famous designer from Austria speak, and he's sort of on a book tour, but he has these quotes in his journal, and he's been elaborating on them visually in public works and things, and now he's touring, and that was one of them. Well, just to pique your curiosity, I'll tell you what the subject is today. And then we'll get into, you know how I am, I'm sort of go around Robin Hood's barn and then, boom, finally we get to it. It's on the teachings of breath, the continued sequence. We're in Gatha, or actually part 4 on breath, Gatha 3, and the subject is thought reading. Thought reading. I'll read just a little bit, but I have many other things to sort of put around this jewel. It relates to many of the things that were just read. It is the vibrations caused by the breath which become thought waves, which carry the thought from one mind to another. It is therefore that thought reading depends so much upon the position in which two people sit with regard to each other. For a certain position makes it easier for the breath to reach another. Although, it is not always necessary that a person must be facing one in order to receive thought waves through breath. If the thought power is strong and the breath is sound enough to carry the thought waves, a person, whether facing or having his back turned, must receive the thought. Now, this sounds quite odd to me. Does it to anyone else? When you start thinking about this idea of thought reading or thought sending? I mean, why are we being instructed on this? Anyone have any guesses or thoughts? Is it just because it's cool and we're trying to develop occult powers here?
Well, I think that the understanding is that we need to be mindful of our thinking at all times and stay focused on the path that is expansive and enlightening.
Thank you. I think that's certainly true. Anyone else?
Thought is the way of communicating with each other.
Yeah, very subtle way.
Might it also mean that we be in tune to our brothers and sisters' thoughts, you know, and so if we're receptive, whether we're facing them or behind them, just that we're open to hear with our inner ears. And just like in a geodesic dome, you don't have to be right next to a person. You can be on the complete opposite side in the dome. And it travels amazingly 100 feet. Just the person's right next to you so that they can bounce. Well, your words can. I imagine your thoughts could too.
Absolutely. Anyone else?
Well, we hold thought in common. And when when we see the news of something that has happened that's not so nice, we hold thought about it, and that thought gets expressed in the political and physical arena. So if we can be influenced by television and the radio, then if we generate thoughts that come from a more peaceful place, I mean, we're putting them out all the time, so it could help make our world a better place.
The current milieu in Wall Street, the negativity of all the credit crunch, is just pulling things down into a black abyss. It's just getting worse and worse.
We want to create with God awareness of God's creation the way it's intended to be, and so we want to stay that way, and also to bring compassion and healing with our thoughts to people who need it.
I think so too. Hazrat and Icon says in this book, The Mysticism of Sound, all things and beings in the universe are connected with each other, visible or invisible, and through vibrations, a communication is established between them on all the planes of existence. As an ordinary instance, if one person coughs in an assembly, many others begin to do the same. And the same is the case with yawning. Did you notice that? Like, you could be in a big something, and one person starts coughing, and it just sends this ripple effect. There's like a resonant vibration that happens. This also applies to laughter, excitement, and depression. This shows that vibrations convey the condition of one being to another. In this way, the seer, in this way, the seer knows the past, present, and future, and perceives conditions on all planes of existence. Vibrations work through the cord of sympathy existing between us and our surroundings. This is what you were saying, Amy. This explains why the howling dogs foretells death, and the neighing of horses the approach of danger. Not only animals show this, but even the plants in times of sorrow begin to die and the flowers fade, while during times of happiness they grow and flourish. The reason why plants and animals can perceive the vibrations and know of coming events while the humans are in ignorance of them is because we humans have blinded ourselves with egotism. The influence of vibrations is left on the chair on which one sits, in the bed where one has slept, in the house where one lives, in the clothes one wears, in the food one eats, and even in the street where one walks. Every emotion arises from the intensity of the activity of vibrations, which, when active, is in different directions, produce different emotions. The main cause of every emotion being simply activity. Every vibration while active raises the consciousness to the outermost surface, and the mist caused by this activity collects clouds, which we call emotions. The clouds of emotion obscure the clear sight of the soul. The clouds of emotion
obscure the clear sight of the soul. Therefore, passion may be called blind. The excess of activity of vibrations not only blinds but weakens the will, and the weak will enfeebles the mind and body. It is the state of vibrations to which a person is tuned that accounts for each soul's note. The different degrees of these notes form a variety of pitch divided by the mystics into three distinct grades. First, the grade which produces power and intelligence and may be pictured as a calm sea. Secondly, the grade of moderate activity, which keeps all things in motion and is balanced between power and weakness, which may be pictured as the sea in motion. Thirdly, the grade of intense activity, which destroys everything and causes weakness and blindness. It may be pictured as a stormy sea. In the activity of all things and beings, the pitch is recognized by the seer. As a musician knows the key in which any particular music is written, each individual's atmosphere tells the grade of activity of one's vibration. Now, of these three grades, do you think that the master is just existing in one of these? I see some heads shaking. Do you not think that it's important that the master understands all these various activities? I mean, there may be a time when absolutely things need to be calmed down, but there also may be a time when there's a need for an intense activity or storm, that things have to be destroyed so that they can be broken down and built anew. The capacity is the breath. It teaches us those things. And previous in these teachings, we've even been given that. That there are certain breaths that are used when we need to be very active, certain breaths when we need to be calm and more subtle, and certain breaths that we retain when we need to maintain a moderate activity throughout the day. It's an incredible science. I wanted to read a little bit from this book called The Inner School Esoteric Sufi Teachings. Because it again relates, so I'm trying to bring in, you know, I'm always mindful of the fact that these lessons were given, I mean, they were given as a part of a whole class. And if we went into the original documents, we would see where that took place. Now they've sort of been collected according to their categories, but we have to try to remember what was the setting, what else was being conveyed in that teaching. If we only read just these words in a very limited way, we only are really getting a very small part of this course of study, but we have to sort of go deeper into it. And each person may prepare things differently according to their own understanding, so perhaps we're limited by my understanding here, but I do my best to draw in other teachings to help illuminate the points. So this is from a section called Everyday Life, and this is The Nature of the Mind. The nature of the mind is to hold an impression, which is called memory. As a consequence, a thought is held in the mind, whether it is beneficial or not, without consideration of what might be the outcome of its retention.
many retain a thought of pain and unkindness without realizing the consequences of discomfort and distress for themselves and others. This can be compared to a child holding a rattle and hitting its own head with it, yet not throwing it away, although the blow is painful. Concentration is practiced for the purpose of gradually developing willpower, which helps in making a better use of one's faculty. One tries to remember the impressions which are worth remembering, and to wipe out those which it is preferable to forget, freeing oneself thereby from that which disturbs one's peace of mind. Sit for a few moments and look deeply into this field of mind or the mirror of mind. Sort of assess what the vibration is there. Are we looking at a calm sea or a sea of moderate activity, or is that sea very active? What thoughts and feelings and impressions are there? Into that mirror, and as if you're looking into your own face, looking back at yourself. Are you looking at yourself? How are you looking at yourself? What are you feeling when you look at yourself? Almost as if you may be looking at the external face, but it is also just a mask to your inner being, but it tells one something. What vibrations arise? Do you look at yourself like a loving mother or kind father? Or does one look at oneself as a judge, someone judging, or critical? Do you look at yourself like a friend? What vibration arises? You see, those thought forms, even we send back to ourselves, think of that. remember I've shared with some people in this room that my grandmother, her name at birth was Anne Pellegrino. She was really a very beautiful woman and quite extraordinary in so many ways. She had a lot of wisdom. And I remember asking her one day, and I called her Anne because she was so beautiful and she was very young for a grandmother. I never called her grandma or grandmother, I always called her Anne. That was her name, of course. And so I said to her one day, Anne, why are you so beautiful? And she said to me, do you really want to know? And I said, yes, I want to know. And she said, come with me. And she went into the room where she had a vanity and a mirror. And she sat down. Now, she was a woman that came from a family of 10 children. And she also felt rather marginalized as a youngster, because the older children got, especially the oldest girl, frequently got preferential treatment. So this was not always an ideal situation. And nor did she have a perfect relationship with her own mother. I remember her telling me that she actually married very young so as to get out of the house. So with all of those things in mind, all those impressions, this is how she came to deal with it. She sat down in front of the mirror and she put her hand under her chin like this, like posed, like this. And she started looking at herself in the mirror. Not in really in a vain way, but in a loving way, you know, like admiring herself. And she said to herself again and again, and looking at herself in the mirror, I love you and you're beautiful. How many people can look in the mirror and say that to themselves? In all of the ramifications of I love you and you're beautiful. You know, that's the impression that she chose to give to herself. Now, was that just for herself? I say no. She had a lot of magnetism. We heard that word in one of the readings. But she had a lot of, another word would be charisma. So when she walked in the room, people felt it. And what's more, when she gave them attention, they felt privileged in some way. You know, that was her gift. She didn't walk in with her head down on her on the floor looking down. She walked in like she was going to greet people, you know. And she was, I said she married young, but by the time she was 24, she was a widow with a child to raise in the 30s. That was something. And she did it. She was a professional woman, and she never married again, although she had many suitors, but she kept them a little bit at a distance. She knew how to do that. And she married only when she was in her 70s again. So she had a very active and a very full life. And when she said, I love you and you're beautiful, it's so that she could get up every day and go to work. She could function as a mother, a professional woman, when women weren't working and surviving in that kind of a man's world. You know, that's why she did it. It wasn't the ego. But also she radiated that. So one has to look in that mirror of one's heart and ask, what are you sending back to yourself? Because that is also what we're giving to the world. You see? It's an incredibly precious life. And we have to decide if we're going to use that for the benefit of others, which has also to do with the subject of thought reading. If we're to read one's thoughts, is that so we can know another person's mind? or perhaps be an agent of some benefit for them, some support for them. Now, I had the intention of reading some other things, and now the time has passed, but I'm going to backtrack because I think they're important. It was sort of really the way I was intending to start the class, but I feel that because they came, I'll read them, and again, maybe there's some benefit. This is from the book Glimpse After Glimpse by Sogyal Rinpoche. And again, this has to do with the mind, so I'm bringing this subject in because it relates to this subject. The preliminary training of meditation practice and purification ripens and opens the student's heart and mind to the direct understanding of truth. The preliminary training of meditation practice and purification ripens and opens the student's heart and mind to the direct understanding of the truth. Then, in the powerful moment of introduction, the master can direct his realization to the nature of mind. What we call the master's wisdom mind. Into the mind of the now authentically receptive student. You see, here we are relating this subject to thought reading. You see, when the master sees that the mind of the student is receptive, that's when that can go. The blessing of that mind stream can enter. So then, in the powerful moment of introduction, the master can direct his realization of the nature of mind, what we call the master's wisdom mind, into the mind of the now authentically receptive student. The master is doing nothing less than introducing the student to what the Buddha actually is, awakening the student to the living presence of enlightenment within. So it's the clear mirror. You know, it's the mirror that's free of those impressions. It's almost when thought ceases, there's a gap. That's why there's such emphasis in meditation on the gap in the breath. You know, in those moments, those open awareness moments, then this is when it can happen. But if we're clouded with all of these impressions, then it's impossible. It's like a very dirty mirror. Nothing can be reflected. And this is why the Sufis always emphasize purification practices every day. Not sometimes, not just at the beginning, it's every day. Because the practice helps to clarify that mind, clear the mirror of the dust of the impressions. He's so sweet. Look at that face. The darling outfit, too. The student then recognizes, in a blaze of gratitude, beyond any shadow of a doubt, that there is not, never has been, and could never, ever be any separation between student and master, between this master's wisdom mind and the nature of the student's mind. Here is the meaning of thought reading. Happen. I assure you, it does not have to be in even the same room. It can be around the world, it can be. It crosses, I believe, it transcends boundaries of life and death, even. Anyone have anything to say about that?